Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and we call this the Chewing the Lean with Kelly and Gene show. Now, most of the time when you're talking, you chew the fat. However, if you're talking to dietitians, it behooves you, in fact, to chew the lean, and that's the name of the show. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and with me from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, Manager of Clinical Nutrition Services, Gene Jones. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Tony.
And from Eastern Kentucky University, dietetic intern Kelly Jewell. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Rick Phillips is on assignment in Isomville and should be back next week. Our website to listen to the show is WMKY.org. We're starting to build a new library, a new collection of shows there. Please visit it. You can download them in MP3 format. For our research, to communicate with us, just look at the things that we think are interesting. It's HM Radio Show. Do that search on Facebook and find our page. Our sponsor for this show, the disease of the month, and this month's disease is type 2 diabetes, or as we call it now, Tom Hanks disease. Remember our motto, life is like a box of chocolates. Eat too much and you get diabetes. And in fact, Tom Hanks has diabetes, as he announced on Letterman. Now, I'm sure this will be analyzed extensively between the time we record this show and the time it actually airs. But he, in fact, does have diabetes. Now, the thing about it is he joins 26 million children and adults. That's 8% of the U.S. population who have diabetes. This is not a rare disease. And you add to that almost 80 million Americans with prediabetes, and you've got a lot of people with Tom Hanks disease, basically. One in three Americans may develop diabetes by 2050 if we don't control our obesity. Risk factors for diabetes, again, if your sugars are running a little high, that is definitely a risk factor. Being 45 or older, and unfortunately Tom Hanks and Gene and I are in that risk category.
We did the math.
Yeah, we were sitting there, when was he born? Well, it turns out Tom Hanks is a year older than we are, and so we could have been in preschool together, but I certainly don't remember him. Family history of diabetes is another risk factor. Also, being overweight. Let me say again, being overweight is one of the biggest risk factors for diabetes, which is why we have that epidemic.
But see, look at Tom. He's not a big guy. It just kills me. I mean, he's not a little bitty skinny fella either, you know, but he's not some big obese fella.
No, he's not.
And you see that more and more.
And, you know, I've seen at least twice now on separate web pages, they talked about the fact that Tom Hanks has lost weight for movies. For instance, Philadelphia, where he played an HIV/AIDS victim. And obviously, we all remember Castaway, where he played a survivor on a deserted island and lost a substantial amount of weight for that part and then regained it. He has also been overweight for some. I remember Catch Me If You Can. He was kind of a middle-aged, portly investigator who was chasing Leonardo DiCaprio all around the globe. So his weight has fluctuated, and there was some argument on the internet that perhaps those fluctuations contributed to diabetes. We used to call that yo-yo dieting. I'm sure you remember that, where you would lose weight but then gain it back. Now, that's not a healthy thing to do. It's not a good thing to do. But
that's not what caused his diabetes.
No, it is not a cause of diabetes, certainly not. I think you're right. Being a little overweight, which he is, does lead to higher risk of diabetes. But agreed, you can certainly have diabetes, and you know, you can have diabetes and be, in fact, thin.
Mm-hmm.
Type 2 diabetes is we used to call it adult onset or non-insulin dependent diabetes. It is a condition of obesity, but it can also happen to thin people. You do not have to be obese to get it.
Because let's not forget that hereditary factor.
Right. Exercising regularly, another risk factor. High blood pressure. As a matter of fact, current guidelines for medical practitioners are if your patient has high blood pressure, you should actually check them for diabetes as well. A low good cholesterol level, a risk factor. You add that into the obesity, the borderline glucoses. That's called metabolic syndrome. Some ethnic groups, non-Hispanic, blacks, Hispanic, and Latino Americans have a higher risk. Women who had gestational diabetes, if you have a high sugar during pregnancy, you're at higher risk for diabetes later on. We'll talk more about diabetes in our second fractional portion. That is the disease of the month, type 2 diabetes, or as we now call it, Tom Hanks disease. Now, we start off, Gene and Kelly agreed to come on the show, and I thought, what can we talk about food-related? Is there anything left? Because we have talked extensively about food-related diseases and food and dieting and so forth. And I thought, what's left? But we've got a whole show. We've got everything we need here. And I wanted to start off with this one that came out of the journal Pediatrics, Athletic Endorsements and Food Marketing. First of all, Peyton Manning, who I happen to like.
Okay, who's Peyton Manning?
Oh, my gosh, Gene.
Okay, we're going to shut the show down for a moment. And we're going to talk to Gene. No, now this show has Tom Hanks and Peyton Manning. And for those of you out there in radio land, this is one of the best shows ever. I mean, how many shows have Tom Hanks and Peyton Manning on them? Well, at least we talk about them, and maybe they're not actually here. Peyton Manning, the quarterback for the Denver Broncos, headed to the NFL Hall of Fame and probably to a broadcasting position, a celebrity endorser without a peer in the National Football League, has also been on Saturday Night Live, turns out to be quite the comedian, does endorsements for a variety of products, but does $12 million a year in advertising, and he owns 21 Papa John's stores in the Denver area, according to Forbes magazine. So he is a pizza magnate, and he also plugs a lot of products. He and his brother famously took on the Williams sisters in a Oreo dunking contest for Oreos. Also, LeBron James, $42 million a year by endorsing McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and other products. And then finally, Serena Williams is number three in terms of athletic endorsements. Now, the Pediatrics article actually looked at 100 professional athletes and looked at the endorsements that they do. The most frequent endorsed category is goods and apparel, but foods and beverages were about 24% of all athletic endorsements. 44 different food or beverage brands, and 79% of those products were energy-dense and nutrient-poor. 93% of those beverages had 100% of calories from added sugar. If you look at the nutrient quality of the products endorsed and the amount of advertising, Manning, James, and Serena Williams are the highest contributors to the marketing of unhealthy foods. And this is
That's really sad, because you have these, you know, buff athletes, you know, and you think, oh, they drink that.
And all three of them are considered generally a class act. You know, I mean, these are people that obviously they get these endorsements because the public really believes in them. And obviously this article was meant to try to bring some responsibility to these people. I do not think that it was necessarily intentional. I think that they may not be aware of it. But I think it's time to make them aware of it and see what kind of response they have.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, let me ask you, as a representative of today's youth, because let's face it, Gene and I are completely over the hill. What makes you choose, and this is not fair for you, I know, but what makes you choose a beverage? Do you look at who drinks that beverage, or does it make any difference to you?
It makes no difference.
She's a water drinker.
Well, who drinks water? I mean, which professional athlete drinks, I don't know, any of them. They all drink Gatorade, don't they?
Oh, my gosh, Gatorade.
Yeah, according to commercials and advertisements, I guess.
Yeah.
I bet you they drink their fair share of water. What do you think, Kelly?
I bet they do. I bet their sports nutritionist tells them to drink plenty of water.
I bet so.
Okay, so water, a very fine beverage, not necessarily endorsed enthusiastically by any of the chief athletes, but obviously the choice of a new generation of dietitians, let's put it
well,
that
how
way.
Well, how would you go about endorsing that? Hi, I'd like to advertise...
Jennifer Aniston endorses that one water with like electrolytes in it or something.
Yeah,
oh, she's
got to
have something added, though.
They've always got to put it in. And let me just say, for the vast majority of us, water itself is perfectly fine. Electrolytes are not a big issue, to be honest. This is not something everybody knows that sweat's salty. And so what you really need to do is to replete your volume. For most people, that's going to be perfectly fine. You don't really need those electrolytes, and you certainly don't need the cost.
You're going to get salt.
Yeah.
It's in everything, right?
Yeah. We see very few salt deficient patients in the hospital, as a matter of fact. On the other hand, the 100% of calories from added sugar is a problem.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, give us about 30 seconds, Gene, on beverages and obesity.
You know, you have these beverages that are just loaded with empty calories. They slide down in 2 seconds flat, and you're not really full from drinking them. And you add up a ton of calories in no time. And it's just a huge contributing factor to obesity.
You know, I bet you could put more calories. This would be a good thing. You could test to see. I think you can put more calories in your system through those beverages than you can through eating donuts. I believe, you know, you can get them in faster.
Don't you think?
Yeah, especially if you're thirsty, you can chug one of those things, and they're going to be easily 250 to 300 calories. Mm-hmm. Some of those big bottles more than that.
At least you have to take time to chew a donut, right?
Well, and
hopefully.
I don't know. I'll take a shot at that. I'm not sure you have to chew a donut.
I mean, I think people don't realize how much they're drinking. It's like when we do food recalls or food diaries with our patients, and they're like, you know, I don't understand. I'm not eating as much. And you walk them through the food that they eat, and it's really not that bad when you find out they have 12 pops a day, and that doesn't include the sweet tea they're drinking, and they're getting all their calories from their beverages. So,
yeah.
And they don't realize how many calories it is either. You know, sometimes when you're doing weight management counseling with somebody, it's really interesting to add it up for them and do the math. And some of them, boy, you can see the light bulb go on. As soon as they see those numbers, they're like, oh my God. Especially once you tell them how many calories they should be taking in.
Right. So you've got, first of all, it is a fast way to get calories in. It is a way that you may not be accounting for. And then the final point about these beverages, they don't make you full. Mm-mm. That is, you can take an amount of calories that should be satisfying to you, should actually slow down your appetite. And if they are in liquid form, they simply do not produce the sensation of fullness that solid food does. So Health Matters, we are generally down on sweetened beverages in general, sports beverages, and the type of things that celebrity athletes endorse. It's really not doing our young people a favor. Time for Peyton Manning, time for LeBron James, time for Serena Williams to start thinking about what they are endorsing rather than just pocketing the millions of dollars. You know, I think about it. I mean, we're talking $12 million, $42 million, and this is not to play football or basketball. This is simply to appear and endorse a product. And I think, you know, you give me 6 months of $42 million a year. At that point, I really don't need anything else. I would be fine. Why would I work for money after I got that? The amount is just inconceivable, really. That in addition to the contract, which is just obscene. That is a lot of money.
That's ridiculous is what that is.
It sure
is. I'm sorry.
Got a minute? Going to change the topic for a minute. Weight loss apps on your phone. Smartphone apps that claim to help people lose weight. Researchers in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine on October 8th evaluated 30 weight loss apps, compared the strategies they used, a program that has been researched. There were 20 recommended strategies. The majority of them did not use. Many of them used only two or three of those recommended strategies. One of the problems is they don't really add the type of support you need to maintain a diet. Gene Kelly, have you seen people using weight loss apps on their phones in your practice?
I have. I think they work really, really well for a small set of people, you know, who are very into the numbers, like adding up the calories they've taken in and the calories that they burn through exercise. They're very helpful for those people. But I don't have very many people who can lose weight with that technique.
So you've not really found it to be that helpful. Kelly,
For some people, yes.
For some people?
Yeah.
Okay. Kelly, any thoughts?
I mean, I think I've seen people use them who've been on Weight Watchers, and they have the Weight Watchers app. I think it's not really that different from using a food journal or something like that. I wouldn't think it would hurt you because it's allowing you to record your food that you're eating and being aware of what you're eating.
Which we recommend.
Right. But I don't know that that alone is going to help you to lose weight.
The American Journal of Preventive Medicine recommends the MyNet Diary app, which is absolutely free and included 13 strategies recommended by the pros. We recommend that you take a break, come back for our second fractional portion, listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. This is the Chewing the Lean with Kelly and Gene show. I am your host, Dr. Tony Weaver, and with me from Eastern Kentucky University, dietetic intern Kelly Jewell. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
And also a real stalwart on our program, a regular contributor and currently serving as a somewhat, I guess you would have to call her a co-medical host, from the Clinical Nutrition Services at St. Clair Regional Medical Center, the manager, Gene Jones. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Tony. Whatever happened to Dietitian to the Stars?
See, the thing was, that was when you didn't have a title. Now that you actually have a title, you're a manager at this point. That's very impressive.
Tony, do you have any idea how long I've had that title?
Right up there with Peyton Manning, whoever he is. Our sponsor for today's show, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease is type 2 diabetes, or as we're calling it, Tom Hanks disease. Tom Hanks, at the time we are recording this show, has confessed on David Letterman that he has type 2 diabetes. Again, there are two major types of diabetes. Type 1 used to be called insulin-dependent or juvenile-onset diabetes. This is a failure of the pancreas to make insulin. You simply do not make insulin. If you do not then supply that person with insulin within a matter of hours or certainly within days, that person's sugar gets to astronomical levels. They go into a coma. They have to come into the hospital. There is type 2 diabetes where the pancreas is actually making insulin, but it is not sufficient for the body's needs. Perhaps the body is resistant and there's tons of insulin flooding your body, but it doesn't work very well. Perhaps there is just not quite enough. that person will have a high sugar and over a period of time has a greater risk of heart disease, problems with the nerves, especially to the feet, problem for the digestive system, but will not die within days if they don't have their medicines. Tom Hanks has type 2 diabetes. Again, insulin not sufficient for his body's needs, but not necessarily going to go into a coma in the next few days, and doesn't necessarily need insulin injections. Again, 26 million children and adults, that's 8% of the U.S. population, has diabetes. In 2012, the cost of diabetes totaled $245 billion in the U.S. So this, in addition to being a common disease, is a very expensive disease. The rates are increasing rapidly because obesity is a risk factor, and our obesity rates are increasing rapidly. It turns out, if you lose 5 to 7% of your body weight, this was the diabetes prevention program, if you have a borderline sugar and lose 5 to 7% of your body weight, you can drop your risk of actually developing diabetes by 58%. So granted, Tom Hanks is not a particularly chubby guy, but becoming thinner could markedly drop his risk of going on to diabetes, but he did not do that. We do not believe that the weight gain and weight loss that he did for his movie career has necessarily caused his diabetes, although that has been reported, I heard from some news sources. Jean, diabetes, common certainly among your clients.
Yes, it is, unfortunately.
What do you advise them when you first see them? Is it about weight loss? I guess the question is it more important to try to lose weight, or is it more important to follow a certain type of diet if you have a high sugar?
Well, I think it's both. But I think the weight loss is very important, because even if you already have diabetes and you're not going to reverse that, you can at least reduce your symptoms and your blood sugars to the point that maybe you don't have to take as much medication. And sometimes you can just manage it with diet and exercise for a long time.
Kelly, this is definitely a disease of middle-aged folks, such as myself and Jean and Tom Hanks. We can still call ourselves middle-aged, can't we? We're not ancient, are we, Jean?
No, not yet. We're not older than dirt yet.
Dirt still has a few years on
yes.
us. So, Kelly, you get a chance, I guess, to interact with the older generation. Has it changed anything that you do? I know you have led a remarkably healthy lifestyle so far, but seeing the problems that our generation runs into, does that make any difference in what you're doing?
Not really. I mean, I led a fairly healthy life beforehand. I think probably the only thing is just getting into good practices now. I know there were times in college where I wouldn't eat breakfast, and that's just not a healthy thing for weight maintenance. And it's something that we also recommend to our diabetes patients, is to eat breakfast and have consistent carbohydrates. So that might be something.
You know, and I think that's an important thing. A lot of times I will have a young person ask me, well, should I be seeing the doctor? Maybe I should get this blood test or get this x-ray. I think the most important thing you can do as a young person is to develop those healthy habits. Now, you may be felled by some disease that we didn't see coming, but honestly, it is more important to have healthy habits than it is to get an early start on medication, than to have diagnostic tests done when you don't feel symptoms. Most of the screening tests, the most important thing for a person in their 20s and 30s is to develop a healthy lifestyle. So I absolutely agree with you on that.
That's very true. You've got to start young, and those things need to be habits. They need to be things that you do without even thinking, like exercising regularly and eating well.
That's our sponsor, type 2 diabetes, Tom Hanks disease. Remember, life is like a box of chocolates. Eat too much and you get diabetes. Now, this fractional portion, usually when Gene's on the show, we come up with a series of Health Matters diet tips. Gene has branched out and did Gene's diet tips. I don't know where that's going, but there it is. But in researching for this year's edition of Health Matters diet tips, I ran into so many diet tips, I thought, why not make fun of somebody else's diet tips instead of making our own diet tips? So that's what we've got. We've got the Health Matters Big Book of Diet Tips. I'll tell you the sources. I'm going to read the diet tips. Gene and Kelly are going to laugh, snicker, support, or do whatever they think is appropriate for these diet tips. First, this was from the online health service, WebMD. They've got their 10 diet tips. And again, I'm going to read them through. And Gene, just stop me when you see one you think that ought to be emphasized. Tip number one, drink plenty of water or other calorie-free beverages.
We need a buzzer. That'd be like a
yeah. Yeah, okay. So you'll like that one. Tip two, think about what you can add to your diet, not what you should take away.
Now, I have something to say about that.
I'm thinking, well, let me tell you, if you're at my level of competence in diet, I do not need to think about what I can add to my diet. I already have a list memorized of what I can add to my diet.
Well, see, I have a story.
Okay.
You know, I see where they're going with that. But I've had people, you know, we tell people that olive oil is a healthy oil, for example, and I've had people continue to eat their lard and, you know, buckets of various types of fat, and then they just slather everything with olive oil and they think it's going to make everything better. Well,
olive oil is not a negative oil. It doesn't take away other
no,
oils.
No, it doesn't. And it does have calories, lots
right.
and lots of calories.
I think that's kind of dumb, I'll be honest with you. I just think that's dumb. Tip three, consider whether you're really hungry. Yes.
Well,
why would
I
have the Oreos out if I weren't hungry?
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. What I usually tell people related to that type of thing is if you find that you're wanting to eat something and it's not really time to eat, then you need to consider whether your tummy's growling, you know, and you're really empty or you're just hungry.
Okay, I got that. You don't want to do preventative eating. I'm not really hungry, but I will probably get hungry later on, so I should go ahead and eat. I understand that part. I also eat when I'm with my kids because I don't want to sit at the table and not eat. So these family gatherings, it's pretty much when the majority of people are hungry, we go ahead and eat whether we feel hungry or not. I think I could probably do better by myself, and my wife feels that way as well. All right, tip number four, eat several mini meals during the day.
Well, that depends on your definition of mini.
I'm figuring those are like the sliders, right? The those little crystal things, that's a mini meal, isn't it?
Well, frequently, you know, people will say to me, "No, I don't really eat lunch, I just have a snack." And I'm like, "Well, fine, what does your snack consist of?" "Oh, I have a sandwich and pop." And I'm like, "Well, that's really, a sandwich is not a snack, it's a meal."
So, Kelly, define a mini meal. What would you consider to be a mini meal?
I think a mini meal, and what we try and say to people sometimes, it's going to have a little bit of protein in it. So maybe a handful of almonds and a banana, or yogurt and granola. Something that is going to have maybe more than one food group in it, but it's not a lot. Something to fill you up a little bit.
Okay. Eat several mini meals a day. Again, depending on your definition of mini meals. Five, eat protein at every meal. I think the idea is, you know, you get that sugar spike and then you crash and you feel bad and you get shaky and you have to have a snack. Protein provides a smooth, long-lasting source of nutrition and avoids the highs and lows. What do you think?
Well, the reason I tell people to make sure that they have some protein and maybe even a little bit of fat with their meals is that it takes longer to digest those things than it does to digest carbohydrates. And so if you eat just carbohydrates, you're going to digest it quickly and get hungry again, and you're going to tend to eat more. So I think it's really important to have those things just for the satiety value. It gets you through longer.
Number six, add spices or chilies to your food for a flavor boost that can help you feel satisfied. Do spices help you feel satisfied?
Yeah, whatever. They taste good. What do you think, Kelly? Kelly's got nothing.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. I mean, that's what we're saying. This is obviously not a ringing endorsement from the dietitians at St. Clair. That's
I sure. like spices and chilies.
I got to tell you, though, my dad, if you had done that, my dad would probably just starve. My dad did not like spicy food. I think it's a little bit tough to decide an advanced age such as myself, you're going to start adding chili to your food. I think that could be tough. Agreed. It does give it an extra flavor boost. And certainly eat flavorful food. I think you can say that. But I'm not so sure that that will work for a lot of people. Order children's portions at the restaurant. You ever done that?
I haven't because I don't like, and children's options are like chicken nuggets or
hot
so I mean,
dogs
I think
or,
you can, I like where they're going because it's a smaller portion, but I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting an adult meal and then having a doggy bag or taking home some of that as leftovers.
Kelly likes leftovers.
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Interestingly enough, it came right after the add spices or chili. And children's meals are famously, they're not very flavorful.
No.
You're absolutely right. Most of them are not really healthy either.
And a lot of restaurants now have half portions, too, that you can ask for. Even if it's not on the menu, you can sometimes ask for a half portion.
And be physically active. No problem with that, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next up from Cosmopolitan, turn off the TV.
I mean, if you're turning off the TV and then playing with your cell phone, it's defeating the purpose. But if you're turning off the TV to focus on what you're eating, then yeah, that can be beneficial.
Yeah.
Also from Cosmopolitan, eat a big, balanced breakfast. An AM meal made mostly of carbs and protein with some fats keeps the blood sugar level steady. What do you think?
Well, I think you have to be careful saying big.
It caught my attention. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, but I think it is important to eat a good, well-balanced breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, like, for their example, they say, opt for something satisfying, like egg whites, turkey bacon, and whole wheat toast, which I agree with, but I don't know that any one of our patients would have been like, that's the satisfying option I'm looking for.
And turkey bacon may not necessarily be, you know, that much better than bacon, so.
Fair enough. I'll read one more from them. Visualize yourself thin. When you feel your willpower breaking, conjure up a mental picture of yourself when you looked and felt slim. I got to tell you, that's right now. When I visualize myself. I mean, I don't think of myself as being a pudgy old guy. I just avoid mirrors, and I can pull this off most of the day.
Tom
Isn't
Hanks,
that true?
He thought he was thin, too.
Yeah. Look at that.
Now, hold on.
Okay.
Tom Hanks is a good-looking guy. Come on now. Let's not be bashing Tom Hanks' appearance, okay?
But he's not. I'm sorry. He's not a great-looking guy. And certainly, the original point is I can certainly visualize myself thin. That has not helped me in any way with my diet. Not a bit. So you tell me how much help it is to get your patients to visualize themselves thin. I think if you're a cosmopolitan girl, maybe that works.
But for me, I don't usually throw that one out there, Tony.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on, this was a website called Lifehack. This is, and Kelly, I assume Lifehack is for you younger people now. The first one, buy a digital scale. Buy a scale that is accurate to 2/100ths of a pound.
Because that's important.
All right, well, why did that cause laughter?
What, 2/100ths of a pound?
That could be a difference of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You weigh yourself at like 102, and then you weigh yourself at 103, and you're 5/100ths of a pound.
Drink a glass of water, you know.
Yeah, so you think that really, so the scale needs to obviously give you a consistent weight that is reliable, but in terms of trying to get it to hundredths of a pound accuracy, I can't see anything for it. I think it makes you focus on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, how many hundreds of a pound you've lost, which doesn't really make any difference. Also from Lifehack, make your diet public. Tell people you're on a diet. What do you think about that?
Yeah, whatever. You know, that's going to make some people.
Well, thanks a lot for that comment.
Well, that's going to make some people just like want to feed you more, you know, don't you think? Have you not seen people do that? I'm on a diet.
Well, I will tell you, when people stop smoking, we recommend they tell all their friends they're trying to stop smoking so they won't just slip them cigarettes. I think I knew you were on a diet, I may not drop some cookies off for Fridays or something like that. But I understand. I don't know. It could work either way. Here's one that I really want to talk about, again, from Lifehack. Don't diet on weekends.
Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. Isn't there like a diet now that's like based on that principle?
So what do you think?
I think that people sometimes are really too strict with themselves on, quote, diets. And so I don't think that it's a bad idea maybe to loosen up on yourself a little bit a couple of days a week. But I don't think that you should think that you can just, like, binge on junk food all weekend and that it's going to make the diet work better. That's not going to really make a difference. Yeah, it's still lots of calories, and it's going to balance out. You're not going to lose the weight you want to.
The only people I know who did the don't diet on the weekends thing went crazy on the weekends. I think it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, like establishing healthy eating habits and a healthy lifestyle when you're younger. If what you're establishing is, oh, I can do the right thing most of the time, and then the rest of the time I can do whatever I want, I think it's not going to hold.
Now, prevention.com has some diet myths. That is, these are things that are actually not true. And the first one, go gluten-free to lose weight. So talk to us about going gluten-free.
Gosh, this just drives me crazy. You know, I can't stand seeing all these people, you know, thinking that gluten-free is going to like be the cure-all to everything out there. And, you know, if you don't have celiac disease, you don't need to be on a gluten-free diet.
And why is that?
Because it's not going to cure anything else. That's what it's for, is for people who have celiac disease. And, you know, a gluten-free diet has all kinds of – it's not an easy thing to do if you do it well. Now, some people say that they're on a gluten-free diet, and you know what? They're really not. If you really are on a gluten-free diet, it's a very difficult thing to do, and it can be kind of expensive, too. Plus, I don't know that you're going to lose weight on it, because a lot of gluten-free items are quite high in fat and calories, because you need the fat to kind of make up for the moistness and to make things stick together when you don't have the gluten.
Also from prevention.com, drink your fruits and vegetables, buy a juicer. This, they say, is a bad idea. What's your thought about juicers?
What's wrong with fiber? Yeah, what's wrong with eating an apple? Why does it make it better to juice it? I don't really get where they're going with that.
So your opinion, the juicers are no good. What I know is that fruit juices, again, if you're in the hospital and your sugar were to go low, the way we raise your sugar, the most common way to raise sugar is to give a person orange juice.
Well, these juice. It doesn't have to be orange juice.
These are very high sugar drinks. And so, first of all, those juices are not that healthy because they're high in sugar. And you're saying juicing in general takes the fiber out of the food.
Yeah, of course it does.
Also takes the bulk out. And we've talked about the importance of that. Also takes out chewing, meaning you can get this stuff in your system faster. Does a lot of bad things, and I don't understand why a person would basically take those elements out of their diet in order to for the convenience of juicing. Doesn't make sense to me.
No, I don't get it.
I mean, it's some people who will buy, they don't, even if they don't do the juicing themselves, but they buy those juice drinks with all the vegetables in them. I mean, you're getting like 12 times of the amount of vitamin C you would need too, so it's like you're peeing those extra vitamins out.
Because you can only use so much.
You're paying to have expensive pee.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Artificial sweeteners. Again, I'll just say prevention.com, people say it is really a myth that artificial sweeteners are a key to a healthy diet.
Well, you know, there is some evidence. I don't think that the research is complete, but there is some evidence that using a lot of artificial sweeteners actually causes you to gain weight. And we're not sure why yet, but I think that there may be something to that. I mean, it may be that people who use a lot of, like, diet drinks and things like that, just if you drink pop of any kind, maybe your diet is just not that healthy. You know, you make less healthy food choices. But there may actually be some trigger there. We're not positive yet.
Yeah, and the two things I've heard, one, it makes you really crave sweet stuff.
Yeah.
As you can make something very sweet, so when you go to your food, you want your food sweeter. And then secondly, back to the fundamental problem with liquid nutrition, uh-huh, is that you just don't get that sense of fullness from it. So two problems there. Last one, we can do this fractional portion from prevention.com. What about chewing mint gum to eat less? They say it doesn't work. Have you seen people that are using mint gum as a diet aid?
No.
Okay. Kelly, nothing from... I know a lot of people who chew.
No, I think I've seen people who, if they have like a craving for something sweet, they'll brush their teeth because brushing their teeth has that mint taste and they don't want it anymore. But
oh, no, do you really think that works?
No, but I mean, I think that's something that people say.
Well, brushing your teeth burns calories.
Well, I mean, and I guess, and the other thing is that, you know, if you go do something else, whether it's brushing your teeth or taking a walk or what have you, you distract yourself and forget that you're craving that thing sometimes.
This message from Health Matters, why don't you go distract yourself? Because we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Tony Weaver, and this is the Chewing the Lean with Kelly and Jean show, our chance to chew the fat with dietitians, which since they don't espouse fat and chewing fat, we decided to chew the lean. With us from Eastern Kentucky University dietetic intern Kelly Jewell. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
And also from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, dietitian to the nutrition services managers. Let's just put it all together there, Jean Jones. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Tony.
Our sponsor for the final time, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, type 2 diabetes, or as we're calling it, Tom Hanks disease. Diabetes, a chronic condition with abnormally high levels of sugar or glucose in the blood. Insulin produced by the pancreas is supposed to lower your sugar. Type 1 diabetes is when the pancreas is damaged and will not produce the insulin. Type 2 diabetes is when the insulin production is not quite enough to meet your needs. It could be you are resistant to insulin and you have actually high levels of insulin. It could be that you don't have enough insulin to get the job done. But one way or another, there is resistance. This is common among older adults. Again, 8% of the population has this. People over age 45 with a family history, overweight, not exercising, have high blood pressure, are all at higher risk for type 2 diabetes. Now, down the road, this may lead to higher rates of nerve damage, higher rates of heart attack and diseases of the circulatory system, some problems with the GI system as well. Diabetes is really a devastating disease. It's a very expensive disease. One would prefer to manage it. The medications we've got are not that good, to be honest. The best way to manage it is, at least the most useful, healthiest thing you can do to manage type 2 diabetes, is to bring your weight down if you're overweight, to exercise regularly, and to lead a healthy lifestyle. That, if you have a borderline sugar, which Tom Hanks apparently has had for several years, will drop your risk of actually developing diabetes by 58%. So by all means, lead a healthy lifestyle now. Lead a healthy lifestyle no matter what your sugar is, but keep an eye on your sugar if you have that borderline sugar or those risk factors. That's our sponsor, type 2 diabetes, Tom Hanks disease. Life is like a box of chocolates. Eat too much and darn it, you get diabetes. I found this October 1st. This was in the U.S. News Health and Wellness section. They were talking about the fact that one of the things that makes us obese is that we have set up an environment that encourages it. We can get food any time of day or night and very
third
close
meal.
By. Yes.
Our fourth meal is.
Our restaurants bring in customers by producing value meals and extra food. Our communities are built without places to exercise, without sidewalks, and there are marketing tactics designed to make us crave salty, fatty foods or supersize our orders. Now, there's another aspect that they talked about in U.S. News that was interesting to me. There is a fear of food waste, and they mentioned several examples. One, the mom who stands over the sink finishing off leftovers from their kids' trays. Jean, you have been a mom. Ever happened to you that you finished the kids' meals?
No.
That is so discouraging. Actually, I will tell you, even though I would do it, I certainly would do it, I was not ever in a position of standing over the sink. Usually I was in charge of trying to get the kids not to tear up the house while the meal was put away. So that was my duty. So I didn't run into that. Then the other one, now this happens to me. A friend bakes a batch of homemade chocolate chip cookies, a rare treat, and so you want to appear thoughtful. And in my household, there is a theory of we need to get rid of these cookies now. Munch, munch, munch. Before they do further damage, we just need to get them out of the way. And the best place to put them is actually in our mouths. So once again, Gene Kelly, not getting anything off this, right?
No. Personally, I know that people
do
that.
You know, for
that.
The radio fans out there, I need some human beings in the studio with me, some normal people that I can relate to. And obviously, I don't have them.
Well, now I'm going to eat a cookie. You make me some chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to eat one because, you know, they're good. I like them. But I'm going to eat one, maybe two. After a while, it's just too sweet. I don't want that much sweet.
We already ate our dinner with lots of fiber, so we don't have
so
that much.
I'm not hungry, and
honestly,
so I'm not going to really eat that.
What is wrong with you? I do not understand this at all. You're satisfied, full after a meal at a restaurant. You've been dying to try. Food was delicious. Portion was big. There's still plenty left on your plate. You do not want to send that food to the trash. That is wasting resources. So you go ahead and clean the plate in order to avoid wasting food.
Thank you, Mother. You did not teach me to do that. You know, my mother never made me clean my plate. It's like, do I not almost always leave food on my plate?
Yeah.
Have you not noticed that?
Yeah.
I'm a food waster. I am. And
I'm
I know
surprised.
That's bad.
By the way, you're just saying that because it's Jean, because I know you don't really care what she's got on her plate. My goodness, you've got better things to do with your time. Kelly, was that in your family, what was the cleaning the plate situation like?
We were never really forced to clean our plates. We did. I mean, we usually ate everything, but that's not because they were yelling at us.
That's because you loaded your plate wisely. Now, when you eat out,
exactly.
Do you finish when you eat out or do you make a point of leaving?
No, I'm poor, so I try and split that buddy up into two meals. But no, even if I had the luxury of eating it all, I don't. It's just too much.
I eat till I'm full.
Yeah.
And then I quit.
Here's from U.S. News some tips, which I think are very good, actually. One is freeze things immediately. Girl Scout cookies, holiday baked goods, things like that. Jean's going to eat one chocolate chip cookie, throw the rest of them in the freezer, and then it's pretty hard to jump into the freezer and get an ice-cold chocolate chip cookie on a whim. You've got to really think about when you're going to eat them next.
I don't have to worry about that. If I set a box of Girl Scout cookies on the counter, I may be lucky to get one or two.
Okay, but this doesn't solve your problem. I mean, transferring it to your family doesn't necessarily mean the health of the Jones household is necessarily improved. But
I
like the idea of freezing things. I think that's a good thing.
But you see, you have to understand who I live with, okay? I mean, if you run 10 miles a day, you can eat a sleeve of cookies.
Okay, fair enough.
You burn it off.
Okay. Next up, their advice is take a doggy bag, and when you're at a restaurant dinner, this is what they say. When the food arrives, your waiter asks, can I get you anything else? Just say yes, a takeout container, and split the meal in half before you start. If it's an oversized meal, just get it right size that portion before you even start eating.
I like that idea, actually. I think that's a really good idea. Do you ever do that?
Yes.
Yeah. What I do, I don't necessarily get the container, but I will, especially at one of the local Italian restaurants, which serves these monstrous things, I'll go ahead and cut it in half. And I'll just say, all right, this is the portion that I think I should eat. And the other one, turns out, usually somebody will come and assist me with it, but we have taken some home.
I eat my half, and then I take half home to my son.
Okay. So. And the next advice, which I think is also good, downsize your Tupperware. We've talked about having smaller plates, smaller trays, so that you don't feel that your portion size is so small. But they also mention the Tupperware. That way you will not feel bad saving a meatball, a handful of green beans, a third of a chicken breast, something like that. When you put those things in one of those giant containers, it looks like you're just being silly. Whereas if you have a small container, you can basically put them there and construct a meal out of them later. What do you think?
That's a good idea.
I like it. And then finally, their final recommendation, which I like, is know when to toss it. Especially, they mention with unused infant formula.
Mm.
They mention urging a satisfied infant to keep eating so formula is not wasted. Tends to override their own ability, and they don't recommend it. And tossing foods, which I will say, I've gotten better at that regularly, especially when the bananas get a little overripe, just toss them out. My wife buys bananas because I like them, and I will try to eat a banana probably every other day. And once they go bad, I throw them out. I don't sit there and try to say, all right, well, I need to eat more bananas. I know that seems silly, but it helps. It works for me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stop giggling. Stop judging me over there on the other side of the studio. So just a few hints there that might be helpful to our radio fans. Fear of food waste. The idea that you must not let the food go to waste, and the only way to avoid waste is to eat more than you want to. Again, by dividing the portions up, by storing food individually, by freezing it, by tossing it when it comes time to toss it, you can actually help your diet out, we think. Now, next up is just baffling to me. There is a guy who I think is a fairly good physician, and he writes a lot. He's also a magazine editor in Lexington, Kentucky. His name is Greg Hood. And we actually searched this over in Gene's office, and we found several versions of this, but this is from his website. These are foods, he calls them soporific foods, that can cause a sleepy afternoon and can reduce your productivity. So you want to know, what foods would reduce my productivity? And here is a list of foods, according to Dr. Hood, that you should avoid because they drop your productivity. First one, potatoes. Now, my wife is completely anti-potato. She says, you know, there's just too much starch there. Her diet, her particular diet, she wants to avoid that sort of thing, so she simply does not eat potatoes in any form. Hood says that these comfort foods, especially if you mix milk into mashed potatoes, as with all starches, the larger the servings, the greater effects, these potatoes will knock you out.
I think we've established that I love potatoes.
Yes.
And I eat them, not that often really, but I do eat them and I enjoy them, and I've never found that it put me to sleep. I had potatoes for lunch today.
Yeah. I got to say, the science behind this is the whole thing is minimal.
Yeah.
No problem with potatoes. Kelly, what's your approach? You can see I'm kind of neutral, but since my wife doesn't like potatoes, you can imagine I don't really get a lot of potatoes in my diet anymore. Jean, she feels that potatoes, well, let's face it, Irish people ate potatoes for a long time and managed to survive. Now, Kelly, we call her, is somewhat of the redheaded persuasion, so I would assume that you would have a fondness for potatoes. I know that
now,
it's just...
excuse me, but it has nothing to do with you. Okay, I'm from an Irish background.
Well, my
okay, and that's not why I like them.
Okay,
I just
confession
like them.
Here. My mother's side of the family comes from the Moody's, and they were very Irish as well. I have some nephews with red hair as well. But, all right, so, Kelly, apart from all ethnic slurs and prejudice and bigotry and so forth, what's your thoughts on potatoes?
I like them.
Yay!
I'm German. We're more of the sauerkraut persuasion.
Oh, but they like potatoes, too. Hey.
They do.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're all right with potatoes. I am apparently the low. I'm used to this. I'm obviously in the minority today on most of the things I say. Other foods that might make you sleepy, according to Dr. Hood, almonds, because they have tryptophan. I mean, please, I'm going to just take this one. How much tryptophan do you think you will get in an almond?
If you're eating that many almonds, you're probably overdoing it.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, whole wheat. As a starch, it induces an insulin release disproportionate to its own staying power and the sugar load. The result is a sugar crash. Whole wheat, sugar crash.
Really?
Bam.
We tell people to eat whole grains instead of...
I don't think that whole wheat's going to cut your productivity.
No, I don't either.
Well, as a matter of fact, let's just go through the sandwich. We start with the whole wheat. The next one up is turkey, the most famous of the tryptophan-rich foods. And I don't know where this came. I think someone was writing a puff piece for Thanksgiving and mentioned that turkey has tryptophan in it, which is true. However, chicken actually has more tryptophan than turkey. Turkey is not a boatload of tryptophan. It is not a bundle of tryptophan in the first place.
I'm not so sure that it's that the tryptophan in the turkey that makes you sleepy or that big, huge turkey dinner, you know.
I think you eat a giant meal with a bunch of your friends,
yeah,
and then you're going to sit and talk. You're not going to go out and play, I don't know, sports, baseball or something like that. You're not going to have a softball game for Thanksgiving. You're going to sit more. I think if you sit after a meal, you'll get sleepy. I do not think the turkey has anything to do with it. And as I said, turkey's not really that high of – it's a good source of tryptophan. Nothing wrong with turkey. However, I did read one site that says, frankly, if you use a carbohydrate snack, no more than 30 grams of carbohydrates, it actually allows tryptophan to be released from your body. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that the tryptophan in turkey is not going to knock you out. Next up, one of the group's favorites, again, we're reading these soporific foods from Dr. Greg Good's website, lettuce. It is mildly calming. The sap from released greens is mildly calming.
You know, there's not a lot of anything in lettuce.
I know. Let me just say, the sap from released greens is mildly disappointing. I think that's a better word than calming. Lettuce just doesn't, I mean, I like it, but I don't expect my lettuce to do much of anything.
But I like it on my sandwich. But, you know, you're only going to put a leaf or two on there. What could it possibly, you know?
Well, let me tell you, it's probably more than almonds. bananas, sleep-inducing foods. We're baffled. And the last one we're baffled by, caffeine. It doesn't induce sleep. Keep in mind, caffeine does induce sleep, but it has the potential to alter sleep cycles day and night, including the quality of the sleep cycles, can lead to hurt performance tomorrow. So you drink caffeine today, your performance drops tomorrow. It's also dehydrating, and dehydration is a prime source of mental sluggishness.
Well, wait a minute. Why would it lead you to poor performance tomorrow? Maybe you just need to have another cup of coffee.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine. More caffeine tomorrow. We'll put that poor performance off till Saturday. I'm good. I don't understand it. I got to say, you know, I will say, in terms of productivity, I mean, have you got any dietary advice for productivity? I really don't. I think avoid the massive caffeine drinks, the five-hour energies, and those type of things.
And just don't overeat, because I think that does make you groggy and, you know, sluggish.
These marginal tips from your friends at Health Matters. Just one final thing I wanted to mention. This was from the Mayo Clinic Proceedings, and it was the October issue of the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. They mentioned the syntax of sin taxes, trying to improve health through taxation. And they mentioned if we increase the tobacco tax by 50 cents per pack, we could get $8 billion a year in tax revenues. Alcohol tax, if alcohol were increased from 10% of the value up to 30% of the pre-tax value of the beverage, we could get $25 billion a year. And a 1 cent per ounce tax on sugary beverages up to $20 billion per year. These would fall disproportionately on poor people. However, the health benefits also would fall disproportionately on poor people. And according to the folks in the Mayo Clinic, we really ought to try to level the playing field so that it is not cheaper to eat bad food, which causes long-term consequences. Do you see any hope for that, Gene, going forward? Do you feel that weight control is mainly individual, or do you think that there is possibility we could change the playing field?
I don't think you can legislate it. I think that it's an individual thing. I don't know how I feel about it putting more of a tax burden on poorer people. You know, here's Gene's tip. I think, and this is going to be kind of controversial, I think that if we want to improve the eating habits of people who are very, very low income and maybe who have food stamps, then maybe we need to like give them a little more guidance as to what they purchase with them. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. You know, we used to have some programs with our extension services that showed people how to budget their money and how to use it wisely and make well-balanced meals. And a lot of those things have gone by the wayside. And now you see people buying junk, you know, snack cakes and pop and chips and things with it. And they should be buying really good healthy food to make them healthier.
Speaking of ending the junk, it is time to get away from our show. Special thanks to Gene Jones, Manager of Clinical Nutrition Services at St. Clair Regional Medical Center, Eastern Kentucky University dietetic intern Kelly Jewell, Moorhead State Public Radio producer Asa Hasoda, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, it's WMKY.org. Visit us on Facebook at HM Radio Show. For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, Health Matters is an over-the-counter radio show used to help people lose weight. Loose stools are the most common side effects of Health Matters. Symptoms typically occur during the first few weeks of listening and then go away, but they may continue. Tell your doctor if you have oily or fatty stools, frequent gas, or oily spots on your undergarments. That's right, let the doctor know. Health Matters has been linked to severe liver injury in a rare number of listeners, mostly those who listen to our Prescription Strength show. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.